I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Le French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. And we're going to be joined a bit later on by Cass Tyler-Ardron for a chat about life in the top 14 compared to the URC, Super Rugby. He's a very well-travelled man. The international picture for Canada as well. Loads more. But there's quite a lot of news, Johnny. Bits flying around.
There is loads flying around. Like between transfers, between games, sackings. We're going to have some of them again already. Players moving mid-season, which is almost becoming a bit like football, but a little bit more regular in the top 14. There's loads happening at the minute, so loads to get through, mate.
And how are you? All good?
Do I still sound like I've got COVID? I'm trying everything to get rid of it, mate. On an inhaler now, so I might sound a little bit funny as my voice tries to adjust. But yeah, I think this is month three of being dark. As long as I make Christmas, I'll be happy. As long as I can get there and be happy and fun and up for Christmas, I'll be delighted.
Your voice has been through a tough period, so we'll nurse it through another week or two and we'll get there. Let's start off then with probably the biggest of the news this week, which is obviously concerning Antoine Dupont. He is apparently not going to be playing in the Six Nations in a few months' time, and he's going to be preparing for the Olympics with France, transitioning to sevens. He's not on his own. Arthur Vincent, Sekou Makalu are going to be with him. Damien Penaud potentially awaiting to hear if he can be released by Bordeaux. And if not, maybe Louis Bielbiere. So what do you make of all that?
I think it's really cool for the world of sevens in that this is their year with the Olympics coming through to shine. There's all sorts going on. There's like behind the scenes documentaries. There's loads that's going to shine loads of insight into the world of sevens. And they sort of rebooted the whole comp this year as well. So it's exciting. You've got Hooper as well from Wallabies captain. He's putting that jersey back on. That'll be epic. The question remains for me is how good are they going to be? This is the thing. So like they're giving away that spot. They're not going to be part of the Six Nations. You've got guys that are going to have to come in and do a job and replace, which is great for life without Antoine Dupont. If that happens at the next World Cup, what happens? Are there Six Nations expectations? Is that impacted? But you've now got, you know, a real chance for people that haven't played. Luku, Kouyou, Baptiste Serin, is he going to get back in the mix? Jeannot, who's been ripping up for Clermont, he's injured now. So the sort of the 15s game is what does life look like without Antoine? And for the sevens game, it's going to be phenomenal. Like these boys in, some of the biggest stars on the planet, in the 15s game, coming in, transitioning, and hoping to take the sevens game by storm. But there's even simplest, like what position do they play? Like Antoine Dupont, he's probably a forward in sevens, but even like the most simplistic of things, like the physical aspect and the fitness requirements in sevens are completely different. And these are all fit athletes, right? But sevens fitness and the way they play the game is like a different sport. So it's going to be a massive shock. I'm going to be really interested to see how they adapt. Obviously, they've been given their spots. Are they going to be good enough to play? We saw like in the Commie Games previously, in previous Olympics, players come in, but they just can't maintain that rhythm for the length of time required. So it'll be really interesting to see what impact they have, how long they play, and if they can really help their nation's chances of winning the competition. But in terms of like the buzz and what it stirs up around it, it's absolutely phenomenal.
And that's why they're in, obviously. Let's make no bones about it. They're not being picked, as amazing a rugby players as they are, brilliant athletes. They're being picked because of their profile, right?
Well, their profile. And also they do bring a lot with them. They're very gifted rugby players. But yeah, there's always a bit of me that has this, I don't know, there's boys that are there that are full-time that have had these spots in between cycles and competitions and they'll be devastated. Do you imagine that's your life's work and somebody gets parachuted in? and it's not guaranteed that they're going to be good. So all these things to work through. They obviously get to prep and they get the warm-up competitions, the warm-up tournaments to show what they've got. But for me, it's going to be the biggest adaptation is the physical aspect of the game. Can they stick with the pace of Sevens rugby that I don't think people have an appreciation for just how quick and how physical it is? Like, it's unbelievable. So we'll see. Really interested to see the warm-up tournaments and how they get on. And mega, like Olympic year, four rock stars. If it goes and it clicks, will be absolutely amazing for French rugby after they've just held the Rugby World Cup. So very cool.
Four rock stars, obviously the headline act is Antoine Dupont, but arguably if you're looking at those four, the one that could potentially make the biggest difference, you'd say Sekou Makalou, right?
I was going to say Biai Barry.
Really? Okay.
But that's the thing, like Sekou Makalou again would be another forward and a line-out operator, but there's also, he's massive, right? How many people on the Seven Circuit are that size? Not really any, because you're like a Titanic turning because you're coming up against the quickest whippets on the planet. So Sekou Makalou, you'd almost think, yes, he would have sort of edge, physicality, can break tackles, can offload, has a height advantage. But
point of difference, yeah.
Oh, massive point. A point. But then also, you're also carrying somebody that's going to turn differently. And it's really weird. Was Biai Barry is a guy that we know has that raw speed, can last at that level. And he might fit more in a more straightforward manner. So really weird to see if he comes in or if Damian Penault comes in. We don't know who Bordeaux is going to release. And Arthur Vincent, again, it's another one, like physically outside centre. Like he's had two knee ACL reconstructions. Is he going to be fit enough to compete at that level? So really interesting. Loads of buzz around the comp over here in France already. And they're just adding a little bit of gold dust, which is pretty cool.
You mentioned Michael Hooper's doing it as well for Australia. France clearly going big as the hosts and getting all these names in. If we see GB do it, any names you want to throw out there? Any players you'd like to see transition to sevens?
I mean, I'm thinking of wingers. I'm thinking, who's the quickest?
Henry Arundel.
I'd love to see Keenan.
Yeah.
Keenan, fullback from Ireland. He would easily, I think, in terms of the lightness he has, his GPS is off the charts. He's got all the technical ability. Henry Arundel, I mean, he stuck together at the weekend. We can talk about that when we get to top 14. Phenomenal athlete, just needs ball in his hands. I'm trying to think if there's any Welsh or Scots. Maybe not at the minute, but those two certainly. A guy like Johnny May. Johnny May's retired from international rugby, but could he flit into a Seven Circuit and do a job? Potentially. So there's a few guys knocking around that would still be excellent.
And these French players that we know are going to do it, they're not only missing the Six Nations, presumably they're going to miss a lot of the club season as well.
Yeah. So that is the question for the club presidents, is who can you afford to lose? And they're obviously going to be compensated. So the loss of Antoine Dupont, there'll be a lot of finance coming from the FFR. Look, this is something that we want to bank on from the Olympic Committee as well. We want to be part of the competition. So they will be rewarded, let's just say, probably very handsomely for his time. And they also have to find a replacement in the interim. So they were hoping at Toulouse to get Santi Arata from CAS, but he's re-signed at CAS. So we shall wait and see who Toulouse bring in to make up for that loss. Because obviously Antoine Dupont, we saw the impact he had at the weekend coming off the bench. Just mega. So who are they going to get? We'll wait and see.
And Toulouse could have quite a lot of cash floating around because by all accounts, Melvin Jaminet may be off to Toulon imminently.
Yeah, and you'd say that is good business for Toulouse in that he hasn't really clicked. He still has certain things that he offer, like kick distance from backfield, off the tee. But just with their style of play, he hasn't really had a proper run of games. And when he has had a run, it hasn't really clicked for him. And he was poor again at the weekend. So apparently there's a colossal offer coming from Toulon. They want to take him. And again, we saw similar with Cheslin Colby, where it was a good operation for Toulouse and the timing was right for them to let him go. And I think this is probably the right decision for Toulouse and for Melvin Jaminet as well, who will want to kick on, get regular game time, because that's not what he gets at Toulouse. You got to think as well, Ange Capoiseau hasn't really had that much game time, so it's only going to become more difficult. Thomas Ramos is the indisputable first choice fullback. But mate, it's weird. It's more and more like football. You get these mid-season signings.
Yeah.
And cash sloshing around the top 14. But yeah, probably the right move for Melvin to move on.
I think with that one as well, we said it at the time, obviously Thomas Ramos was no fool at the time. He was a brilliant player then. He stepped up to another level since then. But to bring in Jaminet and Ange Capoiseau at the same time, with Thomas Ramos always there, it didn't look like that was going to end brilliantly for all three of them. And obviously now we see one of them having to move on.
Yeah, and it was like a shootout, which is horrible to say. But the pool that Toulouse has is that it's always been seen as the mega club, right? So the romantic part of French rugby players is they will accept a lesser salary to play for Toulouse. You know, if it's a question of earning maybe a couple of thousand extra pounds a month and playing for Grenoble or a little bit less and you play for Toulouse, they'll always choose Toulouse. And that's where you get three boys of that caliber coming in, all wanting to battle for a shirt. And obviously there's going to be one loser, and it happens to be Melvin Jaminet. But that's, I guess, the beauty that, or the luxury that Ugo Mola has, is that he has a decent budget and he has players that are willing to take less cash to come and play for him because it's Toulouse. And then he can sort of see the cards he's got in his hands, how he wants to play them and distribute them how he wants. And that's what we've seen. And I think all parties would agree that Melvin probably been disappointed with how he's played when he's had the opportunities, and you'll be looking forward to kicking on and trying to do something a bit different with Toulon.
You mentioned sackings as well as transfers. He hasn't been there that long, but Patrice Colazzo has left building at Brive.
He has gone, mate. He's already been replaced, incredibly. So they lost at home to Angoulême last weekend, or this weekend. Well, what day? We're Thursday. So last weekend, I was called into the office on Monday, and that was it. And again, he's one of those blokes that he's gone from doing so well at La Rochelle to moving down to Toulon and not quite clicking. And I thought with Brive, with the cash and the budget he had, you look at some of the players they brought in, like they've got an incredible roster of players, and it just hasn't quite worked. Even in Pro D2, you'd think they've got so much firepower, they should be blowing everybody away easily and then plotting that return back to the top 14. They should bounce straight back up, but it just hasn't worked. So he has left already. Pierre-Henri Brancan, who was with Eddie Jones with the Australian set up during the World Cup, he was previously the head coach at Cast, has just agreed a contract with them to arrive this week and take them through to 2026. He was looking at signing at Montpellier. Richard Cockerell took that role, so obviously that spot gone. They've actually also brought in Antoine Batut this week, become their line-out coach down at Montpellier. Pierre-Henri Brancan, formerly of Cast, will now be the new head coach of Brive immediately. I think from today he has signed and that is done, and he'll be trying to get their way back into the top 14.
You mentioned the link with Eddie Jones there. He, as is always the case, is in the headlines. Everyone's assumed that he's done and dusted to Japan, but he said not necessarily, and there could be a vacancy in the top 14. He's referenced a big European club as a potential destination for him. So can you see it in the top 14?
I would be surprised in that there are fewer and fewer non-French-speaking head coaches. You look even at Richard Cockerell arriving at Montpellier, who speaks French, like speaks a bit of French, yeah. But it's obviously going to be a slow start getting yourself back into French and being able to, you know, explain yourself and get the detail you want over in French straight away. It's always going to be difficult. And Montpellier are kind of paying. And I don't know if there was one club, weirdly, that I think would look at it, would be a club like Montpellier, where it'd be a Moed Altrad decision. But they've got Neil McElroy, formerly head of everything behind the scenes at Clermont, who's just come in to be their director of behind the scenes, director of sport, director of rugby. Who's a good egg. And I think he would be way less inclined to take a non-French speaker.
Right, we'll chat a bit more about the top 14 later and get our guest on shortly. But let's find out first what your meter moment of the week is, Johnny.
Well, mate, I'm delighted we're doing it before he comes on because it's actually him.
Are you going to embarrass him?
Which would have been really awkward having to explain that he was awesome in front of him. But he was awesome. So Tyler Ardron at the weekend. And there could have been a few boys. Zach Henry, friend of the show, 21 points, big win against Lyon away from home. He was fucking metronomic as well. But Tyler, like, as far as number eights go, and I remember playing against him when it was Scotland, Canada back in the dark ages, like 2014 or something. The big one, mate, the big one. I think we won by a point and a half. and I just remember thinking, this boy's special. And again, Canadian teams that I played with, DTH Van der Merwe, like some wonderful athletes, they just didn't have the depth. But he was somebody that stood out way back then. And I've loved watching him play ever since, no matter where he's been, Ospreys, Waikato, and now we're in France. But at the weekend, they pumped Oyonnax, and he was front and center of everything. Ball carrying, like it was a recital, mate. If you'd watched the game, the offloads, the way he goes forward, he's just got some real all-round qualities that you look for in a back rower. Couple of missed kicks, interesting as well, but I love the fact that he tries the kicks, that he's an all-rounder, that he's got footballing skills as well. Carried hard, aerial ability, complete freak as well, dominated everything, their ball, his own ball. He is ridiculous in the air. He got over for a decent try. He's just signed 2 years this week as well. So all positive. and he was just exceptional. So he is our meter moment of the weekend because he was a star at the weekend. Ridiculous.
There we go. No planning, no favoritism at all. Just pure coincidence that he's on this week.
Pure coincidence, but clearly not. Well, clearly is, because I don't want to say it in front of him.
There we go. That was Johnny's meter moment of the week. And meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan. And you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full price item at meter.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get our guest on now then, and we can have a chat with a very well-traveled man, but one who's made France his home in recent years, and it's gone pretty well. Cass Canadian back rower Tyler Ardron joins us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
We're good. Johnny was just singing your praises. So you've got a fan over here. Big win over Ayna at the weekend. And you must be happy generally with how the season started.
Yeah, for sure. Especially getting the win after a pretty disappointing away game in Paris against Stade Francais. So no, it's pretty good to come back to Cast in front of our supporters. I think they said it had been 6 or 7 weeks since we played in front of them. So it's quite a while.
Well, we'll talk about that game quickly before we talk about Oyonnax, the away game in Stade Francais. We spoke last week to a couple of boys up in Stade, JJ van der Mesh, telling us about Rory Cockett. You played with Rory. I played with Rory as well at Cast. What was it like playing against Rory, your former coach and former teammate in Stade Francais colours?
You know, I was actually, he didn't talk too much. I think he's really been targeted by the refs from what I've seen the last few months in the top 14. So I think he's toned it down a little, but I mean, yeah, he played well against us. He's definitely a player that can play well under pressure. And apart from everything else he did, he was a centimeter, just a wrong bounce off of 50-22 that would have really kept them on the front foot. So yeah, all credit to him. He's definitely a good player.
And mate, for you personally, you made the team of the week in France this weekend. Things seem to be going well. You're loving life in Cast. It's a great place to live.
Yeah, definitely. It's I mean, there's not a lot of distractions, eh? Like I was in Paris, like you said, 2 weeks ago. I was catching up with Brad Weber, a guy I played with at the Chiefs, and already he'd been out to a concert, been invited to 500 things, and pretty much the opposite here in Cast. It's pretty low. We're not there's not a lot of things going on, but the town gets behind the rugby, and if you want to be focused and turn around a game each week, it's a pretty good place to be.
Johnny, you know it well, but Tyler, give us an insight into what it's like. So we have had a couple of Cast boys on before, and they sort of say it's like the town is the rugby almost. It's kind of one and the same.
Pretty much, eh? There's I'm trying to think what there is in the town in terms of big things. There's the military. It's like the paratrooping capital of France. So there's that going on. And aside from that, it's really the rugby and Pierre Fabre, who probably employ, I don't know the percentage, but it's got to be like a good chunk. And Pure Fab are really the owners of Cast. So when you put those two together and consider it the rugby or the rugby supporters, it's definitely the majority of the city.
And let's talk about the Oyonnax game then, because Johnny mentioned all the good stuff. You were in the team of the week. I mean, he's given you his player of the week, everything of the week, Johnny has. But I'm interested in a little clip I saw doing the rounds on social media. What were you doing on top of them all?
Oh, it's not where I wanted to end up. yeah, I mean, I jumped. It wasn't a good read. It was in the system we have, I probably shouldn't have jumped there. I definitely shouldn't have jumped. I saw they put, they were running a bit of a special play and they put a bunch of backs at the front of the lineup. So I was like, well, they have to throw in this area. There's only forwards here. But now the two guys lifting me, I mean, we all just wanted to get our heads down and start pushing. So they just threw me on top and got into their work. So yeah, I ended up the worst for wear out of it all, but yeah, not where I wanted to be.
And the worst bit of scenarios, like this happened to me before, is you get thrown on there and you're like, right, now I just don't want to give away a penalty, so I'm not going to move. And you're just stuck like surfing a mall, looking like a tit, but nowhere to go. And everyone in the crowd is just like, what is going on? Like, it's the worst feeling.
I think it was even worse because I looked over and I already saw the ref's arm go out. So I'd already given away the penalty. And then I didn't know which way to get out of it. Like, I wanted to go out the back, but then they started moving and more guys joined. So it got longer. So I couldn't roll out the back. And I don't even know how I ended up falling off the side. But yeah.
You mentioned you're happy in Cast, obviously, and you've signed a new deal. So presumably really chuffed with that. I'm guessing you had other offers. So what was the kind of motivation behind wanting to stay long term?
Yeah, well, I think we do. We definitely have a lot of we have a good chance at winning the league. And it's a team that's pretty motivated. Like, I mean, I was just in training today and Jack Goodhue showed up for his first day to get integrated. And I think they've done quite well from the looks of things recruiting for the next couple of years, but also the team we have this year and the way we've started. So I don't have that many years left of rugby, I think. Got to make sure the body's still feeling good, but as I'm sure you guys, as you know, it drags on a bit as you get a bit older, and I'd really love to win a professional league. So it was definitely the best chance of that.
What does the initiation look like for Goodhue now? Like, he's just arrived. You're not in Paris. Brad Weber isn't taking him to the Moulin Rouge. When I was in Cast, it was a head shave or you were out for a meal and a few drinks. Like, what would you be doing to initiate him into the club?
That'd be good for Jack, wouldn't it? A head shave. It's a bit dodgy, is Barnett.
He could do with a head shave, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't say it. But no, it's pretty tame right now because, I mean, we've got the biggest home game of our season probably this week. So I think everyone just gave him a glance and said hello, and everyone's so focused on what we've got coming on Saturday that I think he might sneak under the radar and really get away with this one.
Mate, those games, those weekends are extra because, like, we know how much everyone in Cast lives and breathes. Well, like, what amazed me when I was in Cast was on game day, like, 80% of the town is closed because, like, the town's only a population of 30-odd thousand, and then on game day, there's 20,000 in the stadium. But then derby weekends against Toulouse, it just like goes up to another level. So you have like, I don't know, that like feeling of a town being behind you. And then all of a sudden when you're either going to Toulouse or they come to town, it just goes like next level. Can you feel that buzz? Like, if you had people in watching training this week and you get that feeling again?
Oh yeah, you get it straight away. I mean, no one hardly congratulated us after the Oyonnax game. Every supporter was just saying Toulouse was coming next week. So that's definitely the case. But I think there's also that kind of like little brother scenario going on with Cast and Toulouse, and it's probably the one game where not only are they supporting us and behind us, but they're kind of wanting the worst for the opposition, which isn't normally the case. We have great supporters, so that just adds like almost a little extra to it.
You mentioned Jack Goodhue coming in. Generally speaking, I don't think it's disrespectful to say that Cast do a brilliant job recruitment wise, but they do it based on kind of grit or steel or a certain amount of kind of personal characteristics and traits. There aren't generally a load of big egos, are there?
Yeah, no, big time. Like the big name signings almost never end up in Cast. It's quite it really makes for a good environment. Like, I've never been at one of the other French clubs, but I mean, I have lots of friends playing, and I've heard you can start to get that the distance between a lower guy and a higher guy. We don't have any of that. Like, it's all quite in the middle here at Cast, and everyone works hard, and there's real genuine competition for the spots. It's not as if anyone's going to play. But from talking to my friends in New Zealand and getting to talk to Jack the last couple months, just welcoming him and kind of helping him get set up here, It sounds like that's kind of what his role has always been at the Crusaders and with the All Blacks. I know he was in the leaders group for defense, and he's kind of like a gritty, hardworking player himself.
Johnny, that's a big part of recruitment, isn't it? They'll have done their homework. Like, I assume Jack will fit in.
It's quite weird in that it doesn't really change even with the coaching cycle. So like, I had like two or three coaches when I was at Cast. Obviously, you've got Bronkins just left. You've got Davidson in there now. But the type of profile they go for, it sort of generally seems somebody with a point to prove, or like an underdog, or a, like you kind of hit the nail on the head with, like, you compare Toulouse and like the rock star mentality they probably look at, and like the sort of chic of going to like a Paris, or, and then there's like country town, simple people, happy living. You get together, you barbecue on the weekend, and they just try to recruit, like, I don't know, it's a word, dogged in the mentality, but sort of rugged, simple people that are going to come in and do a job, which is pretty cool. And then that sort of forms, like, the identity of the team is formed around those people and the town. Like, it all sort of forms nicely into really tight, because there's not much distraction, and good people that you're spending good time with, and then you want to go off to war with. So, like, that's what I loved about Cast. That was my best experience, probably the teams I played for in France. And again, like yourself, good few people they got come in, like Big Tom Staniforth, or kind of fit that mold, which I love. And it seems like it's going to keep on going.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, they get it right. And like you said, the coaches, I mean, it's my fourth season here, and I joke with Jeremy, I tell him not to get too comfortable, because you never know what can happen. But yeah. We get along great, so I like to give him a bit of shit. But yeah, I mean, it's my fourth season, my third coach, and every time we've turned around and climbed back up the league. So with the group we have, it doesn't take much to just turn a switch, and we can really start winning games.
And with the news this week, you've almost done a swap with Brive. Obviously, Pierre-Emery Broncon has sort of gone there. You played under him. What's the big difference? Obviously, a French coach, but who has worked under Eddie Jones now in Australia, clearly a smart guy, and Jeremy Davidson coming in and leading you now. Are there major differences between the two?
I mean, in terms of the level of coaching, there's not a major difference. Like, they're both good coaches. Like, Pierre's one of the smartest rugby minds I've ever come across. But he would have had a little bit more trouble conveying it to the group. Like, his messaging was a little less clear. Whereas Jeremy's really, like, he's on it. Like, he's got his theme of the week and the things we want to focus on. And he really makes sure that those are priorities. So they're quite different coaching styles. But no, I mean, they've both been great. And they've both, I mean, Pure, we finished first in the league, and we lost the final to Montpellier with him. And like, he's an amazing coach. So yeah, I know he'll do well at Brive. And then Jeremy came in, and we were kind of down to the bottom of the league, and we started winning game after game. He really rallied the troops and got everyone on the same page. So they've kind of fit the mold of what was needed at the time, both.
It's something interesting as well, the point, like, three coaches, four seasons, or four coaches, three seasons, either way. But I always found as well, because of the volatility, you're always a little bit insecure about your spot on the team. A new coach is going to come in. Are you going to get re-signed? Is there going to be a contract? But you've obviously done enough with each single one of these coaches to pick up the game time, nail it down, earn yourself a spot, and keep chugging forward. But like, just generally, how do you find top 14, like, style-wise? Like, you've obviously, like, played Canada national team, you've been in the UK as well, you're the Ospreys, you're part of Super Rugby, but like, coming to top 14, how do you find the different style that clearly suits you so well?
Yeah, well, it didn't suit me that well coming here, if I'm honest, because I started playing, well, I was playing a lot for the Chiefs, and we lost the South Africans heading into, I guess I never really played much when we lost the South Africans, but we started training, and we realized once they were gone, we were just going to try to win the league with speed. And the rugby just started kind of changing, and I didn't last very long. I came to France quickly after that. But then I came here, and it was a real struggle. Like, I had been in confinement. I was down to like 105 kilos. I didn't have a gym. I was just running every week, and they wanted me to play a bit of second row, and yeah, coming at 105 kilos, they're like, I think we got the wrong guy. So yeah, it took a bit of adjustment, but the thing, kind of two things have happened to really put me in a good place in the top 14. I think a lot of the teams have signed a lot of the best players in the world, and it's sped the game up in the last two or three years. So that's kind of led to me kind of helping my game a bit more, as well as myself getting comfortable and what's my role and like, where can I be effective? I'm just not a great ball carrier straight into two guys. Like, some guys, that's with their strength, and me, if I get a one-on-one, I can do some things and get my hands free. So I've really been able to kind of get myself into a position in the team where I can use my strengths. And I'd say between those two things, that's kind of led to, I've really felt better each year. And I mean, yeah, the body's not getting any younger, but I think my rugby's kind of been improving as I'm getting older here.
It's a really interesting point you made about the Chiefs as well. Like, the South Africans leaving Super Rugby, how much of a detrimental effect do you think that's going to have on Kiwi rugby and Aussie rugby generally? The fact that they're now away in URC and playing as European sides, where does that leave those Southern Hemisphere sides without South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. Like, some of my best friends are over there, you know, like, and I talk to them, and yeah, I don't hold anything back on what I think of it, because I think they really need to get it sorted, because I want the best for New Zealand rugby. I think they have such an amazing culture, and I would hate to see them start falling down. And like we saw, they can get things together and really play well. The World Cup showed it. But if it's going to be 5 or 4 Super Rugby teams from New Zealand beating everyone except the Brumbies every week from Australia, I think everyone's just going to come to an equal level, and maybe Australia will come up a little, but they're both going to be teams at a very similar level after a few years. And I don't think that bodes so well for the Kiwis. So I think you can see what the South Africans have done. Like, they've joined Europe, and I mean, they're going well in the URC and the World Cup. They went really well again.
On a personal note, talking about how you adjusted to life in the top 14 and the fact that they maybe wanted you to play a bit of second row, and you have played a bit of second row before. Some people kind of towards the end of their career might transition into the second row to prolong their career. You've said a couple of times that you don't have that long left. I, from the outside, it looks like you got years left, but is that something you consider doing if someone said you can add another couple of years if you play second row?
I mean, I would consider it. I have no issues with doing it. I think just the way that the structure of rugby is going is you can see it's really becoming like a set piece game, and not just a set piece scrum and line out, but you're going to receive a kick, you're going to set up, you're going to have guys chasing, you're going to have guys making a long line to protect the box kicker, things like that. I just think it doesn't really lead well or lend well to my style of rugby to put myself in with those big guys. Like, I mean, guys are getting big. Like, you see these second rows now, 130 plus kilos. And like, I'm struggling to make sure I can be over 110 every weekend now. So, I mean, sure, I would be willing to do it, but I don't think it fits that well. And luckily I played so many sports growing up that I kind of built that athleticism where I can, my strength is getting around the park and chasing more. So, sure, I would do it, but I think I'm better off trying to take care of the body and stay where I am.
And like, looking ahead, another World Cup in 4 years' time. Again, you must have been incredibly disappointed for Canada to miss out on the Rugby World Cup in France, you being here in France. That must have been heartbreaking. But the fact that you do have that hybrid nature, you can play back row, second row, you'll be, 35 and a half for the next World Cup in Australia. Do you still have hopes and dreams of making that World Cup and finishing on a real high note with Canada in 4 years' time?
Yeah, that's kind of my objective. I think like that's right around the time I'd like to retire. And like you said, I think my body will be fine, but I don't want to push an extra year out of it. Like, there's things I want to do after rugby. I've done an undergrad degree. I've done a master's. I want to like kind of do, make sure those things are well set up. And I also want to be ready to attack each season and do the best. I don't want to draw out an extra season to, you know, get a bit more money or something. So yeah, I've kind of set that as a bit of an objective for myself. I'd love to play. I've signed 2 more seasons after this year at CAST, 1 more top 14 season, I would hope, leading into that World Cup, and kind of really go out on a high then if we can qualify. And I don't want to bank on it, but having 24 teams sounds like in the next World Cup should give us at least a better chance of qualifying if we can get things right. So yeah, that'd be great.
You were parachuted in, weren't you, to play in that game against Chile, was it? A qualification for the 2023 World Cup, but it didn't play too much sort of around that. So how did you find kind of going into that game and the whole setup and what transpired eventually, obviously, as Johnny said, was very disappointing?
It was just really unfortunate. Like, I wanted to play both games. So I got all my stuff ready and in order, I thought. But in Europe, it was all during COVID. So in Europe, if you had COVID once and a vaccine, that counted as vaccinated. And then in Canada, even if you'd had COVID, you needed 2 vaccines. Mm-hmm. So I had my flight sent to me. I was getting ready to, I was going to play a game and then the next week fly over in preparation. And then the Canadian government said I wasn't allowed to go be in Canada because so then that same day I went, got my vaccine. And then I was eligible to be in Canada like on the Sunday, and they played on Saturday or something. So I couldn't even play the first home game just because of those reasons. And I thought, okay, well, I'll spend the most amount of time I can with the team because, you know, I'm only one player, but I feel like the experience I have and the things I can maybe help with is probably more valuable even than what I can put on the field. So I flew from France to Victoria, BC, and went out there. It's like a 15, 16 hour journey just for a day and a half to be with the team. So then I could travel with the team to Chile. we hadn't got, I mean, I don't know whose job it was, but someone hadn't done the paperwork so that I could transit through the States. So I didn't even get to be with the team. I got detained at the border, got sent to Toronto to fly over the States to Panama, basically arrived like Friday before the game. So yeah. And then what we ended up just losing like a close game to not qualify. So for me, it was just chaos. Like, I mean, there was probably some things could have been done better organization wise. And you can see that when you look at Rugby Canada, like it's no secret that things aren't going well. And there's a lot of reasons for it. But then also in that whole pandemic going on, like there is probably so much for them to worry about outside of rugby. It was just terrible.
Sounds like the script of a film, Johnny, like Planes, Trains, Automobiles, detained at borders. Like it's insane.
And Tyler trying to get back to save the day, mate. I feel so sorry for you. And mate, you touched on it a little bit there, but like issues behind the scenes, like I've got mates obviously that play for different nations as you do. And like when you say it's no secret, things aren't, you know, quite the way they should be behind the scenes. Like, can you unpack that a little bit? Like, what is going on behind the scenes with Rugby Canada?
Well, yeah. So I'm obviously not overly involved right now. I have a new CEO. Like, I've never spoke to him. He's never called me. I don't know. Like, maybe they're not that keen on getting the pros back. I'm not sure. I see a lot of things online, like saying I won't play for Kingsley Jones or whatever. Like, there's nothing like that. I mean,
is it because of the flights?
No, like nothing to do with that, really. Like that was chaos. But I mean, I've been through worse, man, with Rugby Canada. Like, I think it wasn't when we played you guys. But we played Ireland because we really wanted to take a game during the British and Irish Lions. They were willing to come over and we were doing the Pacific Nations Cup. So we decided to take an Ireland game on Saturday, knowing we had a Wednesday game in Toronto on Saturday, knowing we had to play Wednesday in Japan. So, and we fly only coach. Like I never saw a business class seat my whole life in Rugby Canada. So like, I'm fine with that kind of travel. Like those are the things you do to play for your country when you're from Canada. But no, like, I mean, like I said, I'm just a competitor and like, I want to play the best rugby I can. And I know Canada's playing this weekend in Spain against Brazil, but CAST is playing at home to Toulouse. And that's one of the biggest games of the year. And when I compare, like, yeah, when I think back after I retire, like to play games like that and hopefully put myself on the best stage, compete with the best, like that's what I want to do. And that's the reason for it. It's not even to do with the organization of things or how bad it's going. It's just about what I want to get out of my rugby career.
So in terms of you not playing for Canada at the moment, that is literally situational, as in the not the pressure from club side of things, but just that it clashes too much.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, CAST haven't put pressure on me not to play. Like I never went to them and asked to play, but just like, I mean, I wouldn't for this game, you know, like
no.
We had Oena at home and then Toulouse at home the next weekend. Like that's what I'll remember that forever. I'll never forget the Toulouse game. So yeah, that's why.
But there's also specific windows that you're meant to be released. This one falls outside the window. So like there's no hope or expectation for Rugby Canada to get people that are taking part in these massive games in the club calendar to drop it to play against Brazil. Like there's a certain amount of back and forth and understanding, surely. Like it's weirdly as well, you said, there's things online, you'll never play for Kingsley Jones. Like he's just been given an extension 2025, despite the fact Canada didn't qualify. Like, where do you think stuff like that comes from? Is that just rubbish that's churned up by somebody stirring up shit somewhere?
Oh yeah, I see all kinds of it. But that's the thing, like I said, I'm not, when Kieran Crowley was there, I was so involved. Like I started captaining when I was like, geez, I want to say 23, maybe it was 24, I think 23. And like, he'd already had a psychologist working with me for a few years. Like we'd really built up to things. When we were hiring a new coach, there was not just myself, but some older guys as well. We were on the call listening. The coaches couldn't see that we were there, but they wanted player feedback. Like wow. they wanted to keep moving it forward with us as a team. But since then, I mean, like, yeah, I've had almost no contact. I do talk to Kingsley often. Like he just understands the situation. Like if he was in my place, he would do the same. So yeah, I see a lot of things online that, I don't know, they're not grounded in any sort of truth. So,
and how would you describe Kingsley as a coach?
You know what? Like he has, how like describe him quickly is tough. But what I will say is we weren't going to qualify for the 2019 World Cup. And I mean, I'd been captaining the country every game I played for a long time, but I couldn't be there because I was with the Chiefs. So they were doing all these training camps and he said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make Phil Mack the captain. We're going to take all these like local Canadian guys, build a leadership group, and we're going to bring you in and a couple professionals to play at the end. And I was like, shit, like it felt really weird to me. Cause like, it was almost an ego hit, but more so I was like, I think I can give more to the team. And we ended up going there playing really simple, almost stupid rugby and winning because we didn't have super hard games. I think we had, like, we had Germany, we had Hong Kong, and Kenya, I think. So we just had to be, we were the best of those four teams. So we just had to really keep the ball and be simple. And for things like that, I think he does actually have a really clear idea of what Canada, like where we're at right now. So I give him a lot of credit for that. Cause if you bring in a really good coach, he might think, let's try to actually work on things, make progress the team. But he knew he had an objective just to win a few games. So I think he does have a really good idea of where it's at, the rugby level in Canada. And I just think the level of players is what's letting us down. I don't think it's the coaching right now.
And Johnny mentioned the new contract that he's been given to 2025. Obviously, there is a lot of criticism online for Kingsley James. It's going to be there because Canada failed to qualify for the World Cup. You've mentioned kind of the pros and cons and strengths there. I suppose, is a large part of it that you want a bit of continuity, or how do you see it? And I suppose some of the criticism he gets might be valid, but is there also people miss what's happening underneath, as you say, like he's fighting fires up against certain things?
Yeah. Well, like I've said to everyone that's asked me, like, I don't think he's the main problem in professional sports. If someone has a record like that, should they go? Probably. Yeah. I mean, I've said that to him as well. Like we have really open, honest conversations. There's no hiding it, but what they would replace him with, is it going to be any better? I assume that they looked and said no, and that's why they made the decision. Like I said, I haven't been part of the decision at all. I don't know what the alternatives were, but if you look at, I mean, Cast, we would lose a few games. Like I said, three coaches in three seasons and six games, and I've had three different coaches. So when you look at it from the outside, you'd want to change the coach, but I don't know who's putting their hand up to take that job right now. So.
And what have you made generally about the sort of new format of the Autumn Nations competition that's being reformatted? And again, in terms of game time, quality, opposition for Canada, it's going to be blocked at the start and there's two tiers and there's no promotion relegation for a few seasons. But in terms of more regular games against higher caliber opposition, how much of a help do you think that's going to be for Rugby Canada?
That's the Pacific Nations Cup we're back into, is it? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. I'm a little worried right now that there's been a big disconnect. Like we used to play that back in when I started in 2012 up to 2015. I think we were playing that, but I mean, we would win at least half of our games against like Japan, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga. And I think that gap's really grown lately. So I don't know, like there's both sides of it. Like you do want to play against the best, but is losing by 50 points for four games in a row going to progress you? I'm not sure. I think it's good that we won't progress up from there, that we can play those games. But I think the next year will show where we're at. But yeah, I don't know. It's good that we're playing better games. I can say that.
You mentioned the gap. It's funny because when people talk about the so-called tier two nations, and no one really likes talking about tier one and tier two, but it's been there historically, so we might as well. There's a lot of chat, isn't there, about the Pacific nations and helping them, and things have been done in recent years and it's getting better and better and better. There's a bit of a spotlight on the USA, who also failed to qualify for the World Cup and really struggled. And we spoke to David Ainu and a few of the other guys about their plight or what's going on in USA rugby. Do you feel like in a way North America gets forgotten about a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, having the Moana Pacifica and the Fiji Drua, I mean, it's helping huge for those guys because they have all kinds of professionals all over the world. But then now they have like a base and a culture that they can draw on when they all come back. And we don't even have the guys playing professionally really in Canada. But there's always been so much talk like, oh, we'll put a team on the West Coast that can play in Super Rugby, or we'll put a team on the East Coast that can play in the URC. And you hear so much about it, but it's never come to fruition. But for me, that's exactly what needs to happen. Like you need to play against the best. And even if that team starts out with 22 out of the 23 guys playing every weekend being foreigners over a certain amount of years, I think you'd integrate enough North American players. And that's not even just talking Rugby Canada, like Rugby America as well. Like the two need to grow together. They can't grow separate. So yeah, I think we have been forgotten about, but I guess it's kind of our own fault, right? Like if nobody's stepping up to invest in it, that's the reality of professional rugby. Like money speaks in the end of the day. And obviously no one's put the money up front to do it.
Obviously the MLR is there, but it's been through so many sort of iterations and has kind of failed and then come back. It seems to be doing okay at the moment, but maybe that's going to take quite a long time to sort of get to that level that you're talking about. It's not going to get to the level of Super Rugby or URC or Premiership or whatever. So it's a hard one.
Yeah, I see player, like there's some good players going over there, but then I also see that Chile keeps one team together for the whole year, and so does Uruguay, minus a couple professionals. And then they beat Canada and the US. So I had such high hopes for the MLR, but I mean, at the end of the day, you just got to look at what actually happens and it doesn't work out that well.
So if you were Bill Beaumont then, Corn, if we're sort of saying that maybe Canada get forgotten about a little bit, I know it's difficult when you're in charge and you're in a position of power, but if you were to sort of give us a few key points that could really help Canada, is it money? Is it infrastructure? Is it, what would the key points be for you?
Well, that, like, for me, that's all it is. And that's why, like, I don't point any fingers at World Rugby. Like, they've got so many things to do. And we talk a big game having in the US and Canada, having all these big supporters of rugby and this and that. But I mean, it's the same with rugby. Like, you're responsible for your own destiny and your own performance. And we've never had any of these people that come around and point fingers at everyone else, step up and put the money up for a professional team to compete in one of the leagues. Because I am pretty confident if someone went to Super Rugby or the URC and said, this is our plan, we're going to bring a team, I'd be very surprised if they said no to something in America or Canada. So, yeah, I feel like we haven't had the support and we haven't had the right people step up and do it. That's all we're waiting for.
I know Jamie Cudmore is involved in some way, having played in the top 14, and he's gone back there. For you personally, you mentioned what you might do after playing rugby. Would you think about going in and trying to fix some of these problems if you're asked?
Well, that's, yeah, I get asked that a lot, but I just don't see where the solution is. If there was like a good, clear plan, a good team of people together, and we all started working on the same page, I mean, that's what rugby is. So I love a call. I love a challenge, and I love working for it, but I don't see where the finish line is, or even I don't see the progress being made in the right way. So currently I've probably got other things I would prefer to do, but I mean, I know without Rugby Canada and without Kieran Crowley and Neil Barnes, those guys that were helping the program out, I would have never got a shot at professional rugby. And this has been my whole life for 12, 13 years now. So I'd love to give back where I can, but I'm not just going to go, hit my head against the wall for 4 years and get spit out the other end. So,
well, mate, I'm sure there will be some sort of spot when you finish. There'll either be coaching or performance or leading or part of the back scene stuff. Like, you've got so much to offer, so much experience from being over in different parts of the world. You've seen so much. So clearly you're going to be a resource they're going to want to tap into. Let's talk quickly about different challenge, maybe a slightly more tangible, closer to home coming up this weekend. Derby weekend, Toulouse, Saturday night, 9 o'clock kickoff, live on TV. You've done your analysis. How's it going to go and why? What have you seen that you need to stop, and how are you going to beat Toulouse?
Well, we've seen that there's probably going to be about 15 internationals on the field against us at the same time. So we probably want to stop each of them individually. But no, it's going to be a collective from us. I mean, we're not going to beat them individually one-on-one. So we're going to have to stick to our game plan. Yeah, I mean, we like every week you analyze the opposition as much as you can. You look for places to exploit them, but it's not going to be a weekend of doing anything really special. I mean, they're a well-drilled team that have a lot of good players, and we need to keep the ball when we have it and make them pay by going forward. Because when they have it, it's all hands on deck to keep them out.
The fixture's not fallen well, has it, really? As in, I know, obviously, you're used to playing against Toulouse with all their superstars, but if you had played them, well, even last week, Antoine Dupont came off the bench, didn't he? And they've kind of eased their stars back in. I imagine this weekend, this full bore.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what you want, isn't it? Like, yeah. I want to win, but I'd rather win with all them there than not. So if we're gonna get one over on them, I'd rather than bring everyone.
Mate, also for the fans. Like, for the cast fans, for the faithful, they'll want those boys beaten. And it means even more to them if they beat Antoine Dupont, who used to play for cast as a kid, you know, like, it'll be epic. When you do the analysis, like, obviously very difficult, but when you analyze a side like Toulouse, can you find any weakness? What little types of things have you seen that you think you could exploit this weekend?
Now, it's tough to say too much now, because we've got a game coming up on Saturday. But what I will say is, there's less opportunity the way that they defend than there are against other teams. I mean, they force you to keep the ball and do all the simple things well. They don't leave areas. They don't make many mistakes. So you really have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves.
There you go. That was very
media trained. That was, I am saying
we're not giving any secrets
nothing.
Away.
Nothing.
Thanks so much for coming on, Tyler. Good luck this weekend. Keep your feet on the ground. No mall surfing this week.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Cheers, Tyler.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Tyler, very candid, Johnny. Obviously, slightly embarrassed by you giving him the big build up. But aside from that, particularly on Canada, you know, he said what you'd want him to say. He didn't hide away from any of the questions and he was honest.
He just reminds me of like what a caricature Canadian would be. Totally lovely, honest, and just a really nice guy. So no, it was great to hear little bits about behind the scenes and how it works. And there's obviously been a lot of criticism leveled, but they've probably punched above their weight because they've had some exceptional, you know, your Jamie Cudmores, DTH Van der Merwes, Tyler's, like they've had some phenomenal players come through and they've pumped really far above their weight. So yes, disappointing they missed out on this cycle. They will definitely be involved, as will the USA in the next cycle. And you want them to do well because they're good people, they enjoy their rugby and they play really well. So if they can sort it out, maybe unearth a couple of gems in the next couple of seasons, get them playing a bit more in Europe to lead these sides. Yeah, they can fly potentially at a World Cup in Australia in 4 years' time.
And the story about him missing one of the games in qualification, then getting there literally just in time for the second one is obviously incredible. But more broadly, it just shows that some of these countries do have very good players playing around the world. Often they don't or can't play in those qualifying games and the games in between big tournaments. And even when they do try to, like Tyler, they come up against some massive blockades.
Yeah, I think that was unfortunate because it was COVID, which made it even harder. And I think as sort of European-based internationals and players playing in Europe, we sometimes forget logistically how hard it is for your Canadian, your South American, your African that's going back and forth to the other side of the world, for your Pacific Island team. So you've always got these logistical hurdles. But like you said, like he wouldn't change it for the world in that he's playing with his country. He's getting to see the world. It's playing with Canada that's given the opportunity to play pro rugby and earn him those spots at the Ospreys, at the Chiefs, and now in CAST. But yeah, there's a lot of time spent flying in airports, cattle class, with your knees up around your ears, but it's worth it. And yeah, it was great to hear him talk about it.
And also, that's a story that most people won't have heard. I don't know. I haven't heard it. It wasn't massively high profile and had such a massive impact because we're not blowing smoke up Tyler's ass. Oh, if he'd have played in that game, if he'd had a proper preparation for the second game, there's every chance Canada could have beaten Chile and they could have been at the World Cup.
Well, mate, you've removed the best player from the team. He's the captain. He calls line out. He ball carries. He does absolutely everything. He's man of the match in top 14 games. Like, you stick a guy that really tips everything in your direction. So really unfortunate, but that might have been the difference right there between Canada participating in the World Cup. In the end, it was Chile, but I mean, just incredible that it was those type of qualifiers that came down, and it was the unfortunate nature of missing those little details that meant that he couldn't participate in the games, which is insane.
We spoke about Tyler's performance before we got him on to save your embarrassment, and then I embarrassed you anyway. If you hadn't given the meter moment of the week to Tyler Ardron, Henry Arundel would have been in with a doubt on debut.
Outrageous. Have you seen back the clips of his tries?
Yes.
I mean, wheels. Steve Borthwick, give the guy the ball and stop kicking the ball. Give this boy some ball, a little bit of go forward. What he can produce is just ridiculous. Like the output, physically, the pace for his first two tries. His third try, the power to break the tackle of an Australian international centre. Like, just incredible. A hat trick on debut in the top 14. And quite rightly now, like a buzz around him. Like, what a talent. And you just want to see more. Like, he obviously scored 5 in one game at the World Cup. He's got outrageous qualities. So you just hope now England pick him, they give him game time, and young English kids get to see this boy playing on the wing for England. He was absolutely outrageous at the weekend.
I did see someone as well, rather harshly, I don't know why they did this, put a video together of him being a bit suspect in defence in that game. I mean, he scored a hat-trick. He's 20 years old. I mean, give him a break. Like, obviously, that's a game, an element of his game that in the top 14 will naturally get better as well. So you pick him now for his attacking abilities. It's not like he's bad in defence, but maybe he made a couple of mistakes. And then that, I think, in the top 14 will also improve his defensive game.
Yeah, I mean, that type of physical prowess and talent, you can't replicate. So, I mean, obviously somebody's going to shit on him for a couple of defensive errors, but that type of attacking flair, not many people have. I know what I'd rather have, and it's the ability to do what he does in attack. Mate, the physical capacity that body has is ridiculous. So, mate, I'm looking forward to seeing him play this weekend. Again, he could have easily been one of the players of the weekend. He was phenomenal, but that pace, you just can't replicate it. But he also has the power. That's the difference. It's not just top line speed. It's the ability to break a tackle, get past somebody, eventually offload. So exciting for him right at the start of his career as well. But what a talent.
Conspiracy theory, but that account that posted the defensive frailties, maybe Steve Borthwick, anonymous Steve Borthwick. This is why I didn't pick him.
There's a good chance. Can't chase kicks. He's not coming in.
Elsewhere, you did touch on earlier on, but Zach Henry to the fore. Big win for Stade Francais.
Well, that was massive. Away to Lyon as well. And that's a huge win, given the context of both sides, where they are. New coaching staff's coming in. Zach Henry, 21 points, faultless. And they really did look effective together. And we spoke to JJ last week. And again, just that impetus of having a new coaching team, the detail and the confidence they have, you could see that coursing through them. And then normally you go to Lyon, that would be a stodgy, difficult affair. But Stade Francais looked absolutely settled, confident in themselves, and they blew Lyon away for large stages of the game. So, really excited to see what Stade Francais can do. Chuffed as well for Zach Henry, friend of the show, loves a shoof, and difficult for Lyon as well. Young, new coach coming in, and it's a horrible competition. The top 14, you lose a couple of games and you're back down to the bottom in the basement. So interesting to see how they bounce back this weekend too.
We've chatted a bit about La Rochelle's struggles in previous weeks. They did win this week. It wasn't convincing, obviously, but a young kid, Hugo Reyes.
Mate, just. They won that game by nothing. And I mean, Bayonne, who were poor the week before, came to La Rochelle and made La Rochelle look ordinary. And this is the worrying thing. Like, for La Rochelle, still without Greg, who's going to be out till January, Antonio was on the bench, essentially came on and shored up their scrum, because Colom still is quite high. He wants to scrummage high. And almost like ends up shoving with his chest. Like, he wants to finish high. And it's really weird watching him scrum. And you just get a real sense for how important those players that are still missing are, despite the fact that they've got Soutini, they've got Dante, they've got Hastoy. They're still missing Antonio, Skelton, and Aldred. Those are the three big bodies that make the difference for them. And no matter how well coached you are, you go back to this game, it is a game of confrontation, of physicality, of winning gain line, and looking after ball, and they just struggled. And Reus has come off the bench. He hasn't even touched the ball, mate. Like, he's come off the bench 2 minutes before the end of the game, a penalty from nothing, and he's knocked it over to win the game. But that could really easily have been a home draw for La Rochelle or a loss. So yeah, for them, and I know Rog was joking about it, and they hope something has to change. It's not the coach. They're not going to change Rog, but he needs to get his players back quickly. But it just shows the margins in the top 14. If you don't have your top firepower there, things can change very quickly, and it's cruel. And those three players for La Rochelle are absolutely huge for them.
We're hopefully going to have a chat with a player or two from Pau in the coming weeks. They are ticking along really nicely. Bordeaux had a lot of stars back, but yep, Pau saw them off.
Yeah, the thing that I enjoy about Pau is that this is going to sound disparaging if any of the Pau boys are listening, but they don't have any real superstars. I know they've got Sam Whitelock coming. Luke Whitelock's there, two ABs. But you've got a really decent nucleus of young French players. You've got young Oradou that's been coming in playing from the second row. He looks like he's going to be superb. Simmons from 10, who's controlling things really nicely. Dan Robson, who's hopefully coming on the podcast next few weeks. But there's no like rock stars. And I don't mean that to be condescending, but they play well as a team. And they scrap out well as a team. They're well organized. They're organized in defense. And when they've got ball, they're potent as well. They convert their opportunities. So great to see them marching on when you consider other sides that maybe have those bigger names, bigger signings, a bit like Cast. Pau just quietly ticking along really well, effectively, and picking up another win against the Bordeaux side. Like you mentioned, Damien Penaud, Mathieu Jalibert, Tammy Funa, all these guys back. But Pau still do getting the business done.
Yeah, Dan, if you're listening, I think you're a rock star. So speak to you in the next couple of weeks. At the other end of the table, Johnny, Montpellier lost at home to Clermont. That's five defeats in a row now.
That's not good, man. And again, we talked about it at the start of the program, but Cocker's coming in. It's just difficult, mate. As an English-speaking coach, I know he'll be trying his best in French. You got Stu Lancaster as well. Slightly different fortune, but a few tight wins, which maybe makes it more flattering. Racing flying high. Montpellier, a couple of tight losses, losing at home as well. Five on the bounce. And you're like, the cruel reality of that is that it isn't going to last long. They've just brought in Antoine Batut to be line-out coach, but you know, how long a streak do they go on before a change is made? Five, six, seven losses. So you hope that this weekend they can get out back out there and do something. It isn't going to be easy, but mate, Clermont were very good. Montpellier were made to look absolutely ordinary, but Clermont, the physicality, Kremer, George Mowala, Urda Bijeta, standoff, pumped up, not physical, but just pumped up, motivated, and they were exceptional. So absolutely worth their victory down in Montpellier, and Montpellier are going to have to change things fairly quickly if they're going to start winning.
On the road at Perpignan this week, that could be a huge game.
Hey, that's not easy. Going to Perpignan is not an easy place to go. I know Montpellier on paper have a slightly stronger and better depth to their squad and slightly more talented, but Perpignan are playing for their lives. You see the post-match debriefs of Mathieu Assebès and the players down there, Frank Azema, they actually now play a much better structured game of rugby. Potentially before was a bit more volatile and a bit looser. But for Montpellier, like, Perpignan is not a place that you want to be going on the road and picking up an easy win. That is going to be a difficult game for them this weekend.
And what other games are you looking forward to this week? Some big ones.
Well, mate, we've talked to Tyler. I am looking forward to the Cast Toulouse derby. That's a huge one. The Parisian derby, I've always looked forward to watching that as a neutral as well. Stade Francais Racing. La Rochelle against Bordeaux. So Bordeaux are looking decent. La Rochelle, hopefully we'll have Will Skelton and Antonio back. So you're looking at some big dogs duking out this weekend at La Rochelle. And mate, they have to be better to find confidence, find some points as well before they go into European rugby. But Bordeaux, when you think about the talent they've got packed into that side now, they are difficult and they can go on the road and win anywhere. And the other one is Clermont against Toulon. A little bit different for Clermont this year because you've got Oyonnax and Lyon in the competition. You lose Brive, so Clermont's local or nearest rival that was Brive no longer there. They're on to Toulon, but I've always got a soft spot for Bayonne as well, mate. As you know, they're hosting Pau this weekend, which is a big derby down here in the southwest. So looking forward to that one as well. Bayonne probably a bit more confidence about them after that performance at La Rochelle. So they'll be looking to get a win over Poe, who we just spoke about and are also flying high. So looking forward to that one too.
Thanks, Johnny. A massive thanks to Tyler Ardron for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable. And while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from Sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.